This is a sporting discussion. AJ Mithen and Andrew Donison talking sports of all sorts. AJ, you're wearing your Canberra Raiders, what would you call it, zip-up hoodie. You are just glowing with green excitement.
You know why? Because we are back in ASD Stadium, Andrew. The luxurious surrounds. Had a deep underwent a deep clean as all key sporting locations do.
We are 1.5 meters away from each other, so we can high five because we are
air five. Air elbow.
We actually could high five because 1.5 meters away. We're a tall gentleman with long arms.
Long arms and voices, but we won't.
No,
and that's the discipline.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Now, who wasn't keeping 1.5 metres away was the NRL players in the return round three of the competition, and it went really well.
It was always going to go really well.
So that may be so, but there were, as soon as Peter Volandis said, we are going to come back on May 28, there were many naysayers just going, no, you're not.
Yeah, but 99% of that was, well, we were in the midst of a rapidly escalating pandemic that was just starting to level off. The curve, as we like to put it, was starting to level off just a fraction.
But still, it was ambitious.
It was hatred of rugby league, Andrew. Hatred of rugby league. And arrogance of other sports and other people thinking that they are better than rugby league. And they learned a very, very valuable lesson. No one is better than rugby league.
Righto, code wars. Why not? I think that there were a couple of things that they did really well. One, and also a few things that they might want to put a little bit more rigor into. The one thing that covers both of those is the fan in the stand initiative. $22. Send through a photo of yourself, which was the idea, and you could be on a cardboard cutout made of 100% recycled material.
You know it.
In the stand. And so I think it was Friday night's match, Rabbitohs Roosters, which was the first match. Mm-hmm. And that was where we saw...
First night with the
fan in the stand. That's where we saw a few scallywags. the guy that sent his dog... The photo of his dog, that was really good.
Channel 9 journo Matt Bungard put a photo of his dog. Apparently there was a few dogs, but his dog got put up on the screen and he said, that's the best $22 I've ever spent.
Then there was the, do we call it disgraced or, I'm not sure, like, Boris Johnson's advisor, Dominic Cummins.
That was funny.
That was very funny. So someone had a photo of him. So he had already flouted the government's coronavirus lockdown. So there was some amusing comments on social media about how he's already gone however far out of his way. He might as well keep going to Australia. There was a weird one. There was I'm not sure if I can get this guy's name right, but it was a doctor who is a convicted serial killer. So that's
a convicted mass killer. I think another 200 odd killings weren't accounted for or weren't attributed correctly.
Yeah. So the guy's name was Harold Frederick Shipman. So that was the Canberra Raiders-Melbourne Storm match. He was in a Raiders jersey.
It was pretty funny. His head was on top of a big green Raiders thing. It was quite good.
He's an English doctor believed to be the most prolific serial killer in history, having been found guilty of the murder of 15 patients, with estimates he may have had more than 250 victims. So I think perhaps there might be a little bit of introspection in NRL headquarters, and they'll look for some reverse Google image searches this week.
I can tell you there was, Andrew, because when I was trying to sign up for my fan in the stands image, usage.
Yes.
Look for it this weekend at all NRL games. Because I do get used at more than one.
Oh, okay. So you don't just nominate the game.
You don't just, no, you nominate the team you like.
Sorry. Okay. So our serial killer was in a Raiders jersey. He may not have been at the Raiders game, righto?
Yeah.
Jeez. But it was.
Anyway, when I went to do that the first time, it was pretty simple. Put in your name, put in your address, put in the team you like, pay us the money, upload your photo.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to do it and it didn't work. And I tried it a couple of times and it didn't work. And then I went back to it a couple of hours later and I hit refresh and the thing was vastly different with all sorts of boxes to tick saying, I hereby declare that I'm not being a smart ass and things like that.
Right.
So I think I tried to join up just as they were covering their own asses.
Yeah,
because it's a third party operating on behalf of the NRL. So I imagine after that first weekend, there would have been some quick ass kicking going on from NRL head office to third party head office, and they got themselves sorted out quick smart.
Right.
So I had to promise a lot of other things that I hadn't promised the first time around, but my photo still made it through.
Excellent. Love it. So yeah, interested to see what comes through next week or this week. But
I'll be watching every single game and freeze framing whenever there's crash.
Look at me. The other thing which was a little bit controversial prior to the restart was the broadcast networks piping in or inserting into the broadcast fake crowd noise. Now, I thought that they did a really good job with it. It wasn't sort of overpowering, overbearing. It was just a hum in the background. But do you know why I think it was made so good?
Why?
The camera angles. So they were filming a lot. They seemed to be filming a lot tighter. So from a little bit higher, that you couldn't actually see the empty seats in the background. Because if you see the empty seats and you hear a crowd, your brain goes, hang on, what's going on there? Whereas if you don't necessarily see it, you just think, oh, yeah, there's some noise going on. There's a crowd. I thought they did it really well. I was watching the Foxtel version. I know that there are a lot of people who thought that it was terrible.
It's interesting. Fox did their own. They made their own sounds. Mm-hmm. And Nine employed an external operator who used a combination of sophisticated software and an audio operator to implement real sound effects from specific stadiums. So they hear, so they're kind of, they've got sound grabs like we do use on this podcast occasionally. They've got a soundboard that they dip into. And so they had crowd noises from previous NRL games and had them on the soundboard. And when something appropriate happened, bang, use that sound.
Interesting.
So it said that when on last Thursday, when a Parramatta player scored a try, the reaction was from a similar event at the same ground.
So not a Parramatta try, just a try at
Suncorp Stadium in Queensland. It's very interesting, and as
that's cool.
I wager I watched more rugby league than you last weekend.
Yes, I watched the Para Broncos match.
Yeah, Channel 9 sounds were much more on target, if that makes sense.
As in
the
at
rise,
the, time.
The fall, yeah. Something happened. You know, yeah. I mean, if you weren't looking, you wouldn't realise there was no crowd there because that Channel 9s were pretty much seamless. Fox's ones were a bit more extravagant.
Okay.
In that, no matter what happened, it sounded like there was a crowd of 800,000 people all going off their faces. Because when at the end of the Raiders game, the Raiders scored a try right at the end, and it was a pretty good try. But the crowd noise that Fox gave that for a game in Melbourne was very, very out of whack with what would have actually happened if that had happened.
And also, it wasn't the match-winning try. The game was over.
The game was over. It was just a beautiful killer. It was a fantastic try. But it sounded like I said, you know, 500,000 people all weeping with joy and delirium when in Melbourne it just would have been met with a stone wall of silence.
And one AJ Miffen.
Yeah.
So one
foghorn voice.
Yeah. The Thursday night match didn't seem like that to me. They might have changed over the weekend. I might not have been really paying full attention, but I thought that it was just a good murmur in the background, and it rose at the appropriate times. So well done to all involved. And
that's I wanted to hate it. I wanted to rubbish it. I was expecting a good 3-4 days of rubbish on Twitter.
Yeah.
Twitter material for that. But I actually liked it. I thought it was okay.
There's a lot of
your traditionalists hated it, but they hate everything.
So personally, I don't think it's necessary. But hey, it seemed fine. So well done. Good on them. Now, the return of the NRL also saw a record-breaking TV audience. So the Para-Brisbane match.
1.3 for that one and 4.5 for the whole weekend.
1.3 mil for a game is the most of any regular game since 2014.
Yeah, and the highest on pay TV, the highest simulcast game ever, in that it was shown at the same time on Fox and Nine.
Okay.
400,000 viewers on Foxtel, which is an astonishing number for pay TV in Australia. There was 1 million more viewers than who watched in round two. But to be fair to round two and round one, things were a little different then. Everyone had other concerns other than watching sport.
Yes.
Because the NRL rounds and the AFL ratings for their first efforts this year were pretty poor because everyone was worried about, am I going to live?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then so there's people have spent the last couple of weeks just really some people really amping for some live sport to return. So there was always going to be a bump. It'll be interesting to see if that continues this week. One of my favourite things, though, was the fawning over how awesome it was that it was being broadcast into the United States. Now, the first match was on something like between midnight and 4 a.m.
Other ones were 2:30 in the morning Eastern and 5:30 in the morning Eastern, so just pump the brakes. But it was pretty funny that compare that. I mean, the NRL were just pushing that their games are on and saying, hey, watch it if you want to, it's pretty good. But I haven't seen many articles of, hey, Jim Bob in Black Creek, Iowa, love this game so much that he's, left his family to go and become a rugby league lover, like they did with the AFL after round one.
Yeah.
Remember that? So-and-so loves AFL so much that...
Oh, it was because it was a broadcaster.
It was Pat McAfee, former NFL punter, who said, hey, this is pretty cool. I like this sport. And AFL media went, oh, my God, someone over there likes us.
So I agree with you that the reaction... was cringeworthy. It's 100% cringeworthy. Like, but his reaction was also insane. He was extremely exuberant about it. But I completely agree. Like, I was and watching
hasn't
the
said
game.
A word about it since.
Oh no, of course not. But I remember watching a game, and I think it was I'm sure it was Eddie McGuire commentating. And mentioned that, people in the States were watching and Jeezy ramped up the commentary and it was...
You beauty cobber, how about it?
Good on your pal, good on your tiger, good on your sport.
Anyway.
So talking about the NRL and the TV side of things, the ratings were announced or happened on the night that the NRL announced it secured... The broadcast agreements through to 2027. So there's been a fair bit of talk about, will we, won't we, what's going to happen? So Channel 9 wanted to walk away.
Fox have signed till 2027 and Channel 9 are staying until 2022.
Yes.
When this current deal runs out, but it's looking like they will extend as well. And going on what was in Channel 9 papers, it's looking like they'll get the streaming rights as well, which is... the darkest, deepest fear of any NRL fan who wants them to be a slightly progressive organisation.
Well, yeah, because I read an article just before saying that the NRL will block Telstra from streaming rugby league matches from 2023 onwards because they're trying to get that 5-year broadcast extension with Nine.
Yes, we can talk about that more another time. Now, Andrew, let's get down to business for what we're here to talk about on a sporting discussion this week, and it's about paying for content, paying for your sports content. Been a few things going on at the moment with sports journos being laid off and punted, and the type and style of content that's being put out there, very clickbaity across no matter what sport it is. So we put a question out there on the Twitter, which is at @ASD_radio, or the facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. Jump on there, give us a like, and join the group. It's a good group. Lots of good people talking some good sport.
A lot of activity.
Now, the question we asked was, are you willing to pay for sport content? What would you pay for? How many dollars are reasonable for sports journalism and coverage? And do you pay already? And is it too much and too little? Now, there's a fair bit there.
There is a fair bit there.
But people were willing to give us some good stuff back.
So can I, before we go into that, can I ask you those questions? What do you currently pay for?
I've got subscriptions to the Nine papers and the News Limited papers.
Mm-hmm.
I've got an NRL.com account, but I don't pay for anything there. Mm-hmm. I've got a KO Sports account.
Yep.
Used to have Foxtel, don't have it anymore. And I've also got I contribute to a Patreon page, Rugby League Hub Long Reads, which is run by Steve Mascord.
Okay.
Old school rugby league journo. That's probably as far as I go. What about you?
So I have also gotten rid of Foxtel. I did have KO over the summer, but I dropped that when the football leagues stopped. I've picked that back up. And thankfully through my phone, I'm with Telstra, and they give me access to the AFL app, the NRL app, to live stuff through AFL, NRL and Super Netball. And it's weird. I can watch the games, at least last year I could, live on my phone, but the Telstra TV box, when I go into the AFL app on that, it's not giving me live games. So that's a bit weird.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, apparently the screen size is limited as well.
I don't know about that. It definitely was.
There was a big fuss
2 years ago.
Fuss for Telstra users who wanted to watch using their iPad, because there was an agreement between Telstra and the AFL that the screen wouldn't be available on anything bigger than an iPhone.
Yeah, and which made it even worse if you wanted to put it on your TV.
Yes.
And I also, like I said, Patreon, I contribute to The Final Word, the cricket podcast, Jeff Lemon and Adam Collins. So they're the things that I pay for. I'm lucky enough that through my work I get Herald Sun, whatever that is.
Now, we use those subscriptions as, sports content pretty loosely, because that's a general newspaper subscription, but the sport is a big part of that.
Yeah.
Particularly the Herald Sun.
Yeah, exactly. So what did we get?
How much is that? How much would you say it is all up?
As in what I pay for
you pay a month all up for all of your sport content?
I don't know. Let's probably only $20. It's impossible to know because I've got the AFL app, the NRL app through Telstra. Right.
So
mine's all linked. But we did get a lot of people telling us what they did and don't have. So Sean McLaughlin said, I paid for KO all last year, pretty much just watched AFL content, so I guess that's what I'm willing to pay. However, I'm not willing to pay for the AFL/Telstra app, even though it's much less because of the device and screen size limits. So it must still be a thing.
That's fair enough. That'd drive me insane.
Oh, if you're trying to watch it on your TV,
even on your iPad, if you can't watch it on a full-size iPad, something's completely wrong. We had a few other comments too. Through the Sporting Discussion Forum, which is proving to be quite the place to go for your sporting chats. Tim Dodgson got in touch, and his first thing was, the football AFL, this is, he's talking AFL, the football purist cannot watch AFL on KO. And a sporting discussion being a sporting discussion, we just can't let you leave a statement like that hanging. So we pushed Tim a bit further, and he said, sorry, you can watch it, but the delivery of the picture quality via streaming is not adequate for the purist. I have invested good money into a quality TV and have high internet coverage and run a KO trial, and it was Channel 7 comparable vision, as in horrible. I'm assuming he means standard def. And Foxtel and 7HD vision was supreme. I've also witnessed KO in other people's venues and other people's houses, and it's poor. What do you think of that? I've never had any trouble with KO.
No, I old school
Foxtel now, and that I did. But yeah. KO seems to run okay for me.
So I've had, no dramas with KO. I got to say, I don't think I'm the right person to be asking, because I don't think I know the difference between standard def and high def. I'm not I probably would if I saw it, but I'm not someone who really sort of,
You wear glasses. Take off your glasses.
Oh, taking my glasses, I couldn't see the damn screen.
That's standard def. Put your glasses on.
Yeah. But no, I've never had any issues with KO. Maybe Tim's television is significantly larger than ours.
Yeah, when you've got a big TV, the frame rate is a big ask for streaming things in high def.
So Kieran Healy, he responded to that and said, agree, KO is shocking, the picture is horrible. Yeah. So apparently it's just me.
Now, Dan Jarvis also got us on the Facebook, and he said, yes, Australian sports have a model to go off from the existing American sporting codes, which just reminds me, I also have a subscription to MLB TV, but I forgot all about that.
Okay.
Yeah. Australia has already adapted to the subscription model of entertainment. Sport or individual code channels or apps is the next step. I have KO and already subscribed to the MLB, so I'm already a convert. So he has... Dan is keen for what I'm keen for, which is codes to take control of their own broadcasting. That's a whole lot of the discussion for a whole.
Oh, no, podcast. No, I want to get into. Yeah. I want to get into a little bit of that because, I've got some. I have thoughts.
We've got Premier League football on Optus Sport.
Yep.
Which Jo Kolevsky on Facebook said her husband has a subscription for that, $15 a month, which is a lot of football soccer on Optus. It's actually pretty good platform. So there's lots of content for that, but there's an interesting the whole basis for this podcast essentially, Andrew, came from the old soccer is Mark Viduka, Lucas Neal, Vince Grella, those fellas saying that the Football Federation of Australia should can Fox Sports and run their own show broadcast wise.
Yeah, so they actually put a proposal as part of a roadmap for broadcasting and revenue generation.
And now they were banking on 1.5 million subscribers paying something like $25 or something, if memory serves correctly.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
That would be for Socceroos games under 17. Sorry, you got it? Off you go.
Yeah, so they... There is 1.4 million this is about players. So they've got, if FFA worked towards ensuring the remaining 1.4 million participants who are not currently registered were translated into registered players, then they'd get money, $49 million at $25 per participant. So there's not quite the watching FFA TV, as they're calling it. But look, it's a...
Which is why we had the question.
It's a great idea.
What's a reasonable amount to pay? Because everyone else would say, I'd happily pay $10 a month for FFA TV, which means it would last maybe 2 months before it goes completely arse up broke.
If that, yeah. So we put something out about that on Facebook as well, and Scott Campbell got in contact and said, the limited size of the Australian audience plus limited offshore TV interest, as well as soccer being the number four sport in the country, would possibly translate to a small but dedicated target market. Currently, the league is stale. There are no big-name players, as well as small crowds in big stadiums contributing to a lack of atmosphere. Combined, these factors mean that any pay-per-view model would be a tough sell.
Bang on.
And there was Greg Werner, nice thought bubble. Reality says no. KO, very small multi-sport take-up. Football will be even less, given that the current 10 will want it for nothing and probably find a way of getting it.
Yeah, true. So, everyone's really against the wall. There's been a bit of KO feedback for people who used to be Foxtel subscribers but bailed on that just to keep the sport.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what Foxtel was banking on. KO's still not cheap. It's $25 for a two-screen setup and $35 a month for a three-screen setup.
Yeah.
Now, that's three times Netflix subscription cost.
Yeah, but there's probably significantly more than three times the number of people that would have a Netflix, that would want a Netflix subscription than there is that would have KO. Mm.
I would imagine.
So I just think that it's a great idea, the leagues and associations setting up their own television television setup, streaming the game, streaming all of the different things that they could possibly put on their channel. But I'm not sure if, firstly, I just don't think anyone would pay enough, or enough people would pay enough for it to be viable at the moment.
I don't think people understand how expensive it is to broadcast your own sport to a high def, world class level.
Yeah.
Now, we've talked before about the NBL and their television broadcasting through SBS and Fox Sports. Now, they pay for that themselves.
Mm.
And there was a bit of angst and back and forth when that deal was announced, because it's only something like two or three games a weekend out of 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
Pardon my ignorance on the fixturing.
No, I know.
But the reason that is the case is that it costs upwards and around of $40,000 to broadcast one game in high def. And when you're talking about a sport like Aussie Rules or baseball or something like that that runs for 3 hours or a 2020 match, the production costs for that are absolutely astonishing. And I think that's a point that really goes past a lot of people when they're saying, oh, you know, I'm not going to pay more than $15 for this.
Yeah, and you look at the ABL, the Australian Baseball League, all of the games do get broadcast in some capacity, but it's a very rudimentary setup, and they're probably doing it the most efficiently of any team. Actually, probably teams
State League football does it. A lot of leagues do their own broadcasting, but the ABL, the baseball league, each individual club is responsible for whether they stream games or not.
Right.
And the actual league itself is only responsible for streaming one game per weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
So each club, Brisbane's probably been the best at it, and they say they can do it for like $5,000 or even less for a weekend of streaming, and their product's really good because they've got people who know what they're doing on it.
But which helps.
There are some clubs who, I mean, it looks like an Apple Movies job that someone's whacked together on an iPad. You know, graphics sliding in, jumping in from the side, and
yeah, Star Wipe.
Batters come up to bat, and it says their names like Dickie McDickerson or something like that. It's placeholder text.
Yeah, okay.
Name your McName face. I think it was. Yeah.
So you've got. Let's go.
Your $40,000. Make sure that doesn't happen.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, so the AFL in 2015 signed a 6-year, $2.5 billion agreement. Right. So everyone's, oh my God, that's a huge amount of money. It is a huge amount of money. And if they decide to broadcast through their own channels, they need to somehow get that $400 million per year recouped in costs. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if they were producing everything themselves, they would sell the product to TV stations, and the TV stations would broadcast it. That's fine. What they'd be relying on, though, is people actually paying a subscription fee, and it's in my mind, I don't think it's viable, because that broadcast money then goes to the players in terms of the salary cap. And if they don't get as much money, the players aren't going to get paid as much, and they need to make sure that they're getting enough to pay the players what they're used to. Now, just talking about the AFL broadcast rights, do you know that in 1960, the VFL, They rejected an offer of £14,000 to broadcast the last quarter and replays. So that was the first broadcast rights. And in 1971 was when I think at first got a formal broadcast deal, which was Channel 2 and Channel 7 paying $200,000 a year for 5 years. I think they only played replays, so nothing live.
Wow.
But $1 million over 5 years, as opposed to $2.5 billion over six. So it's gone up a little bit in the last 50 years.
One thing I was curious about was overseas, and we got Jason Moore, who contacted us, who lives over in the States, said, "I pay for AFL Live International. It's worth every penny, and I pay a little extra to make it a St Kilda membership as well." So there's so AFL Live International costs $126 US, and there's a Watch NRL app as well, which is available in the States, which costs probably around the same US dollars. Is that a lot of money to try and bring people on board? I mean, MLB out here is $200 and something. But 120 US out here. But everyone knows what Major League Baseball is, and everyone goes to find it, and everyone knows all of that. This completely flies in the face of everything we've just talked about. But is 120 US too much to charge for an AFL or NRL product, or are they just knowing that it's only going to be expats who are going to be doing it?
Well, so you break it down, it's basically 180 Australian dollars. So if we go put that as a monthly figure, then you're looking at $15 a month. $15 a month, what's Netflix cost?
About that. Yeah.
So it's
in the States?
Less oh, no, 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 here.
Here, yeah.
So that's comparable. I know that we've got a friend who lives in Sweden and has the AFL Live app as well. And so I think a lot of expats will have that. But then, so
does it grow the game though? $120 to watch it? But it's also on Fox Sports 1 and I guess over there. But
yeah, but what you're getting is not just the games. You're getting all of the programs. So the idea is you'd get, you know, the analysis programs and things like that.
Yeah, true.
So what, in my mind, what the various leagues need to do. You need to make it attractive. Like, why would I want to purchase this? It's because you get exclusive, because you get live sport, but also you need some sort of exclusive content. So whether that be the full press conferences and you can see those, or whether it be each team has to do certain interviews or insights into the club that are exclusive to the app. But then again, people will find a way around that.
There's always a way around.
Someone will just grab the screen recording and put it up on a YouTube channel or something. Yeah. So I think that in Australia, we don't necessarily have the I'm going to purchase
of paying for stuff, is there?
No, and it was nicely like that. Idea is nicely summed up, Xavier Player. This is just like anything else in life. If you want access to something, you pay for it. It baffles me there are people who don't understand the world's simplest thing. So,
yeah, we all want free news and free sport because that's what we've grown up with, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but have we though? The newspaper, everyone used to buy the newspaper. You would buy your daily newspaper, and now people are expecting to get the same content 80
cents,
for free.
Now it's $1.50. You know,
yeah, but people are paying nothing for.
Yeah, now you get it all on Twitter or on Facebook, or you can flick through aggregator sites or things like that.
So if it was 80 cents a day, and let's say you only bought the paper for 5 days of the week, that's $4.
$4 a week,
$200
$20
a year,
month ish. Yeah, $16 a month. Yeah,
$200 a year. And what's the cost Herald Sun subscription? $40 a year or something? Oh, I just made that up.
You just made that up.
Cool.
It's like $28 a month.
$28 a month.
Yeah.
Okay. So a little
bit
more
for online and everything else, but that's a News Limited subscription, so it gives you access to all the different papers and that.
So it's not actually that much more than what it used to be when we were buying physical papers.
When you break it down, yeah. But people still have a real thing about.
because when newspapers went digital, everything was available.
A paywall. Now, I talk about a paywall because there is a sports journalism website called The Athletic.
Okay.
Which is based in America. It's in America, Canada, UK version as well. Kay Silver, who got in touch with us on Facebook, said, I pay for The Athletic, NHL TV and MLB TV. The Athletic is excellent and well worth the money. Now, The Athletic is a website that is 100% paywalled, no free looks.
Okay.
And they went around recruiting heaps of when ESPN and Fox Sports and places like that would cut journos in the States, The Athletic picked them up, or The Athletic also headhunted a number of big, well-known journos over there, like Ken Rosenthal, who writes about baseball, and Jay Glazer, who writes about NFL, David Aldridge, who writes about basketball and things like that, Emily Walden, who talks about minor league baseball. So they've got a big suite of big names who write about the big sports in the UK, the US and Canada, like hockey and things like that. And there's been talk for a long time, well, not talk, but there's been questions of The Athletic. Are you going to open up an Australian version of the, of this? Now, The Athletic costs $10 US per month to be a subscriber. You get a free trial of about, what, 2 weeks?
Yep.
And then that's it, and then you've got to pay. It's $10 US per month. Or $5 US if you pay up front for a year.
For a year.
Okay. That's the only way to get it. And they have a big number of subscribers. They've got a huge number of subscribers, actually, because they've got all those big names, and that's all like serious, proper sports writing, no
it's like,
clickbaity, I can't believe this guy said fire to the dwarf sort of stuff.
Yeah, so it's not just here are the scores, this is what happened, here is a summary of the press conference, here is Shane Warne tweeting happy birthday only to Mark Waugh. Let's write a story about how he still hates Steve Waugh.
Now, I think it's worth raising here as well. Now, Australia doesn't have much of a culture of paying for their news content, and Australia definitely doesn't have a culture of long form, settle in and read big stories about sport. Which is what The Athletic is. A lot of it is really in-depth analysis pieces that are quite long, opinion pieces that are incredibly well-researched and quite long, those sort of things. And that's why I don't think it'd float here. Forget about a paywall. The fact that it'd be someone has to settle in and read a well-considered, written 1,500 to 2,000-word piece by a respected sports writer, I can't see it working here.
So I think that people are screaming out for that, though. Everyone's saying, get rid of your rubbish clickbait journalism.
Though? Because rubbish clickbait journalism always wipes the floor with considered long form stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course it does. But if you had a platform,
know that if long form stuff worked, it'd be pushed.
But if you had a platform that was specifically dedicated to it, so I think that it has a chance of succeeding because if it comes in and is, you have to, it's pay for content from the start. So I think that was the issue with, as I was saying before, the issue with the Australian newspapers is when they first went online, you could access everything, and paywalls only started to come in a few years down the track. So everyone had gotten used to paying for it, to not paying for it. If they had have said right at the start, $1 a week will get you this, then it would have been so much easier. People would have gone, oh, okay, I can equate that to what I'd pay for the newspaper. Fair enough. Would it have had as many people access it? Who knows? Maybe not. But I think starting as a pay only is an advantage rather than coming in, trying to get some goodwill and then going, ha-ha, gotcha, now we're going to charge you.
Yeah, and I've sold it a bit short here because there's also podcasts and audio and things like that, and it's not just deeply considered 1,500.
It's
a lot of sports analysis writing that people want as well. And remember way back when we spoke to Rowan Connolly, former footy journo, one of his big gripes was that that sort of reviewing the actual game and analysing the actual game coverage was disappearing, if it hasn't already, out of Australia's sports media.
Yeah. Well, I remember on Fox Footy when it... So AFL 360 was launched and it was, I think, on Monday night. And then on Tuesday night, there was AFL Insider. And it was either the Geelong or the North Melbourne coach, one of the Scott brothers, was on that as a co-host, and they were genuinely talking about tactics and using all of the footage available and go, why did this happen? Why did a team do this? What's the purpose of doing X, Y, Z? And so that's the sort of stuff that I love, and I know that there's a market for it. Now, is it a big enough market to sustain? Who knows, but they'll never know unless they put it out there and try.
Yeah,
I think the biggest thing is now a lot of people have – they're used to app-based viewing, whether it be phone, tablet, or television. Like my TV is not plugged into an antenna. I have a Telstra TV box and I've now got an Apple TV box. And I watch things – I have to open up the app and go in that way. So viewing habits are changing, like literal physical habits of click onto an app and then choose what you want –
yeah.
As opposed to flick through the channels, are changing how people view.
Yeah,
I think that there is genuinely an opportunity for some good a sporting league to just go, right, we're going to do it. We are going to say however many dollars a month and we're going to broadcast. And I reckon smaller leagues are probably actually at an advantage to do that and just see what happens.
Yeah, well, be a gutsy move right now, but hey.
Well, yes, with minimal live sport on.
One interesting thing that did get put to us on the Twitter at AST Radio from Mel, when we said, would you pay for sports content? She said, absolutely not, from unauthorised people who don't have inside knowledge or access to exclusive interviews or additional information more than mainstream media that are trying to exploit people for their own financial gain. Now, take the second part of that however you like it, but the first part is quite good, that Mel has no intention of paying people who don't have access and can't bring anything to the table that's not from the source.
So I would counter that with a... So... You look at any comments on articles that, let's go, Caroline Wilson writes, where they talk about, you know, I've heard and my sources and this, rah, rah. People, they nowadays do not pay that any regard whatsoever. If you actually do have exclusive access to something, but you obviously don't want to give up your source, people will just go, oh, that's just rubbish. You're making it up.
Yeah.
So... I agree that that would be a great thing, but the Australian sporting public would just not accept it. They'd go, well, who'd you hear that from?
Yeah.
So, look, I think it would be great, and there's a lot of, over this period of time, there's a lot of really excellent podcasts that
sports podcasts have exploded.
Yeah. So as a Hawthorn Football Club fan in the AFL side of things, there have been some excellent, excellent podcasts where Tony Wilson has done a brilliant one. Ash Brown is doing a series. I think it might have been Tom Morris, Fox Footy, did a one where he sat down with Jared Rufford and Jordan Lewis, and they went through, over a couple of days it seemed, and went through a whole range of issues and looked back on various decisions that were made, and it's been fantastic. And like, actually, Mark Howard has also done some Hawthorn ones, which have been just brilliant. So, yes, when you get that access... it is so good. But when you get access and everyone knows who you're accessing, you're going to get a tempered message. Unless you get Jason Ackermanis, for example. Whereas if you have a source that you don't need to reveal, you can get much more interesting and juicy information, but people go, no, you're making it up.
Yeah, true. It's all interesting. It's all very interesting. We got some good responses, I think. People are – the overwhelming thing was that people are willing to pay for what's good, essentially, or access access to live sport, most definitely. The journalism is another story.
Yeah. So, yeah, you look at what's happened since the particularly in Australia, the football codes stopped, so people dropped their KO subscriptions.
Yeah.
Now the football codes are back. People will pick it up.
They weren't interested in magazine shows or anything like that, or docos or anything like that. They just straight up dropped them and that was it.
Yeah.
Now there's a different aspect to this, Andrew, that we won't talk about tonight, but we're going to follow it on across at ASD_radio on Twitter and facebook.com/asportingdiscussion.
Talk to me. What is
that? And that is smaller sports, niche sports, smaller leagues. That right now, who face financial challenges at the best of times, but who right now would be in mega strife.
Yep.
And I'm throwing the NBL in there with this because they're finding it tough too, even though they're out of season.
Yep.
So I guess the question we want to ask people is, would you pay for a subscription to watch that league if you knew that that money was contributing to that sport or that competition's survival? So something like the NEAFL, New South Wales State League, Rugby League, the NEAFL's the Eastern Seaboard Aussie Rules competition.
The Shoot Shield.
Shoot Shield, yeah. Shoot Shield's okay because it gets Channel 7 money, I think. But
anyway, oh, no, but I just
this
mean...
This is the level we're talking about.
Yeah.
If you were able to pay a small amount, not a token amount, but obviously because a token amount means they go broke.
Yeah.
Would you be willing to do that to make sure that that competition has a better chance of surviving?
Oh, that's a good one.
And there we could be talking, I mean, that could be an amount of money that it would surprise you in how much it would need to be. Because these organisations would need to bring a lot of money through to wash their face in the first instance.
So basically what would need to happen is the league would have to say, it is going to cost us $600,000 to exist for this year as a league and to broadcast.
Yeah, we have $400,000 worth of sponsorship.
Yep, so we've therefore
got $100,000 worth of, you know, club fees, whatever.
Yep.
We're screwed if we don't find this money somewhere. Therefore, we would like to ask you to pay $50 for an entire season of NEAFL football, blah, 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 blah.
I think they could get a bit creative as well. And you could offer it as, you know, you could have, depending on your level of membership that you pay, you could have a round named after you or a match named after you or a quarter, like the Triple M where they drop in various sponsors in lieu of an actual... So possessions, you know, they call them Carlton... Well, they used to... You know, how many Carlton drafts has AJ had? You know, you could say...
Yeah.
How many...
Shilling everything off.
Yeah, how many... How many AJ Mithens has you know
Andrew Donaldson had?
Exactly. One.
Yeah. I think that's an interesting, it's a natural progression from this higher level stuff around
you
know, high paid journos, big leagues who are already having heaps of money thrown at them.
Yeah, especially because everyone wants the local. You want your local sport. Everyone wants big sport to be like it was in the old days. Righto, do you want to pay for something that looks like the old days? Let's get the VAFA into it.
Well, know? That's the thing, yeah. I mean, if you have to pay, took a Northern Footy in Melbourne or up in Queensland, local football soccer leagues, if you pay $12 to get in to watch a game at the stadium, at the ground, then you'd spend another, what, 20-odd on beers, hot dogs, whatever. Souvlaki, chivaps, all of that.
Yeah,
if you're me, one of each, 12 of each. You've donated quite a bit to the club. Would you be willing to pay that again and then some for an annual streaming subscription, should streaming be available?
I love it.
Yeah. I like it. It's an interesting one.
Yeah. Look, I'm really looking forward to how you word that extremely long question. So
there'll have to be some thought given to it, but keep your eyes out for on Twitter at ASD_radio or on facebook.com/asportingdiscussion. That question's coming in the format I decide. It may or may not work, but if you're listening to this podcast, at least you know what we're trying to get at.
Yes. AJ, earlier this year there was the Women's T20 World Cup. Later this year there may or may not be the Men's T20 World Cup. Personally, I don't think it will go ahead.
I think that'd be insane.
I think it's going to be logistically trying to get the countries here will be extremely
difficult.
They'd
all have to be here now, essentially.
Yeah. And the Cricket Australia announced the summer fixtures, which are all maybe going ahead, so there's some warm-up games for the World T20, which won't go ahead if the World T20 doesn't. Now, the CEO of Cricket Australia, he says that it is a very high risk of the Cup being stalled and not going ahead. Okay. India, the BCCI, the benevolent BCCI,
the Board for Cricket Control Worldwide,
they have, just out of the goodness of their heart, said if the T20 World Cup doesn't go ahead in 2020, then we will look to host the Indian Premier League in that window.
Oh, that's nice of them.
And as compensation, they're meant to be hosting another T20 World Cup next year. They've said, and Australia, you can host next year's T20 World Cup.
Is there supposed to be one next year?
Yes.
What?
A 2020 World Cup and a 2021 World Cup.
Okay.
Yes.
seems pretty stupid, but hey, whatever.
How likely do you think it is that the 2020 T20 World Cup will not go ahead and the Indian Premier League will happen in its place?
I am surprised that that's what the BCCI have suggested.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would assume the announcement has been made already by the time we finish recording this podcast. What BCCI wants, BCCI gets. So that's the end of that.
So
that is a 100% locked down solid gold guarantee that the T20 Men's World Cup won't be happening in Australia in 2020. And the logistical nightmare of having to sort it out for 2021 will just get dumped on Australia by India. While they go on carrying on counting cash from the IPL.
Very, very true. However, there was an article written, the ESPN network, they reported last week that the ICC, the International Cricket Council, was moving to take the 2021 tournament off India because the BCCI has failed to gain tax-free status for the event from the Indian government. So they've missed a whole range of deadlines.
Oh, that's fantastic.
To provide confirmation. So,
oh, how convenient. And here was I thinking they were being very generous. So that's outstanding. Scuttle. Buttery.
It is very, very amusing, but yeah, we'll see what happens there.
I think we all know what's going to happen there, Andrew.
And AJ, one final thing before we go, because in the COVID-19 break, a lot of sports have turned to esports, mm-hmm, including the Formula E competition, which is the motorsport competition that uses electric cars. Mm-hmm. So since their season was interrupted, they've had an esports series going on. Been raising money for charity, which is good. 27-year-old Formula E driver Daniel Abt has been fired from his racing team because he recruited a professional video gamer to play under his name in an esports tournament.
Yeah.
He got really? Was the Home Challenge series.
Why wouldn't you, I guess?
Well, it's live, though there's an actual video stream. So the suspicions were raised when his face was obscured by something. Also, He had failed to register a single point in any of the previous rounds, and he all of a sudden finished third.
Oh. So he sucked, and then all of a sudden he was great. I love it.
So professional gamer Lorenz Horsing, who had his face obscured throughout, was the driver. Now, the driver, Daniel Abt, has been booted from Audi, which is his racing team.
Yes.
Guess who owns the Audi team in the esports competition? Oh, sorry, the Formula E competition.
I've got no idea.
Daniel Abt's family. It is the Audi Sport Abt Schaeffler team.
So he's getting a monster payout then?
Well, I don't know about that, but I think it's quite amusing that he's been booted from his own family's team.
I like it.
So
good.
Don't cheat, even if it's in your e-sports alternative world.
Or don't get caught.
Well, yes. Get a better face mask for him. All right, that'll do, AJ. I'm looking forward to seeing how you put together the question of the week for people on socials. And people can listen to you again on Monday mornings, AJ.
Monday morning, ABC Central Victoria, 9:15 a.m. on the Breakfast with Fiona Parker show. Always good fun.
2 hours prior to that will be myself on the Melbourne Triple R Breakfasters team doing all sorts of sports raps.
Congratulations, Sarah.
Yes.
Don't forget our socials at ASD_radio, facebook.com/asportingdiscussionbrand, spanking, looking new website, asportingdiscussion.com.au. More content coming up there as content comes up there. And that might do us for this week, Andrew.
Have a lovely, lovely rest of the week, AJ.
You too.